We're talking to Dominic Smith about his book, The Last Painting of Sarah DeVos. The enormous amount of research in so many different areas seems fairly dazzling in this piece, because there's so much knowledge about painting techniques from the previous centuries, but also the whole process of forgery and the whole market of forgery. And I'm wondering if you had some inside knowledge when you were doing this.
I did. I was lucky enough to discover the forgery work of a man named Ken Perenni, who for many years was a master forger. He kind of forged paintings of different time periods, early Renaissance, Dutch Golden Age. But what's interesting about him is that he at one point realized that the FBI was going to catch him. They have an art crimes unit. But being the very cunning person that he was, he decided to wait for the statute of limitations to run out on all of his art crimes, and then write this very interesting tell-all memoir about it, in which he describes exactly how he forged all of these paintings. So I read this, was completely transfixed, and ended up having a kind of email correspondence with this master forger, in which I asked him to authenticate the forgery methods that I used in the book. And he was actually quite willing and corrected several things that I'd done wrong in an earlier draft of the novel. So he was a great source of knowledge, not only about the technical side of forgery, but also mainly through his book, this idea that fakes also need to tell a good story, and that there's this narrative storytelling side of forgery that's I think as compelling, or maybe more so, than the technical kind of look-alike side of forgery as well.
In addition to this rather complicated story of producing the forgery and then it sort of being discovered and the authentication processes, there's also quite a lot of knowledge about what went on in 16th century painting guilds and the process that artists there had to work under. And I love the contrast also between that and, say, the 21st century gallery process of authentication too. So when you were researching the guilds, did you go and look at how painters' particular lives actually worked out working under a guild?
I did. I mean, what's interesting is the role of women in those guilds. So the kind of thread that I kept following to the guilds was the kind of these lost women painters of the 17th century golden age. And it turns out that there were about 25 women in these guilds. And so I spent a lot of time trying to find out as much as I could about not only the workings of the guild and this kind of pecking order of who got to paint what, which was important. There are no landscapes, for example, by women of the 17th century. So part of the conceit of the novel is imagining the circumstances under which Sarah DeVos comes by the training to execute a landscape, a painting. And so it was fun to kind of reconstruct and talk to, obviously you can't talk to members of the guild anymore, they don't really exist in that form, but going back to archival research and then also talking to art historians who've specialized in one example, this woman named Judith Leister, who was a member of the guild, one of the first women to be admitted, and then kind of lost to history for about two centuries before being rediscovered. So a lot of the novel comes out of trying to reimagine how women fit into a very structured and ordered society like the guilds, and how their work may have been hemmed in some way by those restrictions.
Now, in addition to really interesting historical detail about how the guilds are structured and how forgeries work, there's some very sad personal stories too woven into this. There's Sarah's loss, there's Ellie's loss. Did you have a very clear idea of how you were going to actually have that relationship end up? Or did you actually decide halfway through the book that it was never going to work out?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the things that the book explores is, well, there's a couple of ideas. One is the transcendence of art, right, you know, laid right next to human loss. And that was something that I very deliberately wanted to explore. So the fact that this painting has been in, you know, Marty de Groot's family for three centuries, and yet, you know, through his bloodline, he kind of discovers that all these people have had these premature deaths and starts to imagine that somehow the painting has played a role in that. So I got interested in the way that art endures right alongside all of our own personal losses. But then, of course, there was the more, I think, human side of that loss and understanding how a painting that's created under tragic circumstances might speak to someone like Ellie Shipley many centuries later. And even though, and it's not, I think, a plot spoiler to give away that she is the forger of the Sarah DeVos painting, there's a weird kind of devotion that goes into that act of copying this iconic work that happens to be the work, a landscape that she painted in the throes of grief after losing her daughter to the plague in the 17th century. So that was definitely a key idea, the kind of idea of loss and the permanence to some extent of art and how those things intersect.
Finally, when we talk about, as you say, the character Ellie's devotion towards that and how she made that emotional connection across the centuries with that work. Did you find that when you were talking to that particularly infamous forger too, that he had that same respect and devotion to the works that he forged?
I think so. I mean, this is the interesting thing about forgers is that, you know, they've been around since the very beginning of art. They've always been there. It's kind of the dark arts of the museum world. And yet they're usually very talented but thwarted artists. So they've turned to it almost as a way of becoming recognized, but their attention to detail and their respect for the originating artist is never ever wavering. They actually have a lot of kind of deeply founded respect for them, but it's troubled and it's complicated because they're also in most cases trying to have personal gain out of that, but you always find them a little bit torn between what would have happened in their own career had they gone the straight and narrow and developed their own vision and their own voice and aesthetic. Interestingly, now someone like Ken Perini now paints what you might call legitimate fakes. So they're in the style of a particular painting, but he's not trying to sell them as the real thing, and therefore he's staying on the right side of the law. So it's interesting how his own narrative has kind of taken a turn.